You know, like, my sort of conception of a man was like, well, I, like, killed the fucking animal. What else do you want? You know?
Yeah, right? Something to put up the perimeter and throw
food. If anyone there. Comes to the door, I'll kill him. Like, we're good. We're safe. Like, what else do you want from me? It's like, a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? A lot more. Like, I want a partner. And it's just so hard to be a good partner when you have underdeveloped sides of yourself because you're just missing things constantly.
Welcome back to the MCP. My name is Rick Alexander, and today we feature the third installment of a three-part series where I'm interviewing, well, it's more of a roundtable conversation between me and the founders of the Special Forces Experience, Jessica and Jeff DePazzi, as well as Luke Montgomery of The Montgomery Picture. He handles all of our media, and if you guys follow me on social, you've started to see a lot of pictures by him. He's also a super insightful guy and just really really a pleasure every time I get to be around this high caliber of a human being, which is why I wanted to do these roundtable discussions, because although it's not always such actionable advice, I think I really do believe in the importance of just hearing good ideas and ruminating on those and contemplating on those and just seeing where they bring you. So today is the final one, and then on Monday we go back to our short form morning coffee episodes, Monday and Friday, and then of course we'll have another interview with Dr. Katie Pate next Wednesday. Again, I just want to ask, if you guys are digging the show, share it with friends. I am getting rid of the morning coffee Instagram, so now it's just @RickAlexander_. If you could tag me, if you want to follow along with the show, I'll be posting show notes and cool tidbits on there. And then also, if you're getting a lot out of this show, it would mean the world to me if you'd head to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. Again, I'm going to start going over some of these reviews on Monday's show, and I'm going to send a signed copy of Burn Your Couch to a few of my favorites. It would mean the world to me if you'd give us a review, help us climb the charts, and we'll get the morning coffee word out to more and more people. Without further ado, on to the show. So for the third part of this three-part series, I was thinking something that also came up in our journeys and also is very relevant to the work that we're trying to do in the world, which is, at this moment, create better men. It probably will evolve a bit to creating better humans, and even, I would say, even the goal now of creating better men through the process and through the trials, that actually is going to, as we'll get into, actually develop a better world. And so what I think we'll talk about on this last roundtable is the role that the masculine and feminine energy play in a healthy psyche. Because as I've seen it in my life, you know, it's easy for us to think of gender roles, and that's actually not what we're talking about at all. We're talking actually everybody has a masculine and a feminine side. And like, people have heard it be like, get in touch with your feminine side as the masculine and stuff. And then you've also heard other things being talked like, well, what about a toxic masculine and the toxic feminine? And often that those things, if those do occur, those are occurring because people haven't taken the time to work through its opposite polarity in their life. And so it's showing up as some kind of feeling like usually a compensation, I guess, in my life. And I've noticed it in my own life because, you know, when I was in the military, I felt very much in this masculine world, but I didn't love the way that it was showing up for me. And then, and that's not to say like a blanket statement about the military. I mean, specifically for me, I didn't like who I was as a man, really. And then as I got out, I found that because I didn't like who I was, I stepped into feminine energy a lot, and I was like in yoga studios, and sort of what I lost was a lot of my directness, that like the doing that you would equate with masculine. And as I tried to come back to some kind of a healthy center, I found not a lot of good role models, and it was a very difficult experience. And so in this ayahuasca journey, I actually did sort of settle a lot of that, what I consider to be a bit of a feminine fracture in my psyche that happened at a super early age. And so I think we'll kick off the conversation just talking about the roles that they play. And Jess, I know you have a lot of experience and you've done a lot of thinking on this topic.
Yeah, well, I'll start by saying that I think that the divine feminine, or the concept of it, has been misconstrued by the New Age community. Mm. When you think of the divine feminine, just what comes to your minds? What image?
Chloe.
flowy. Yeah, that's exactly the word that I was thinking too. It's like this flowy woman in a dress, playing music and dancing and stuff. And that's not necessarily the role of divine feminine when we're talking about how it plays out in a man's life. Because when you think about flow, being flowy and being musical and dancing around, think that it might be hard for you to access that, like, at first go.
Mm.
What the divine feminine is at its essence is graciousness and grace, and it's compassion. It's compassion for every living thing, every bit of yourself, no matter deemed good or bad. And I think an easy way to think about that and remember it is you think about mom energy versus dad energy. Mom is like perfect perfection. Oh, you're great the way you are. You don't need to change. You're fine, you know? And dad energy or the masculine energy is like, you can always be doing better. Let's try this. Let's like do something that you don't want to do for the sake of like just being better. So I think when we think of the role of the feminine in a man's, the man's world, it's learning to love yourself, learning to be kind to people that you don't necessarily like, and understanding where they're coming from. You don't need to like everybody, just understand where they come from. And
yeah, I would back it up a little as a man. You know, in utero, we start off as the same creature. There's a time around, I think, 9 days when the rift happens, and then men start producing testosterone in a different, usually higher volume, and women start producing estrogen in a higher volume, and that starts to program our neural networking for certain things that are going to be traits later on that would be considered more masculine and feminine. In the masculine side, people think of some tendencies that are equated to like left brain thinking, that are problem solving, linear movement, you know, getting it done. Obviously women can do all those things too, especially if they nurture them. And on the feminine side, there's a higher amount of mirror neurons. There's usually more empathy, more macro creative nurturing that goes on through those chemicals being injected into the into the fetus. And then eventually, you know, you're born, and then there's like boys play with this and girls play with this. And then so we're cultured. And what happens, I think, through that culture is we're cultured to split and not nurture each other's properly. And I think that's part of making greater men, in this case, better men, specifically, not women, is learning to revisit those feminine tendencies, those empathetic states, and bridging the gap between the micro laser-focused linear left brain and the macro big-scale creative right brain. And once you have a balance of those two things, I think you get a more holistic point of view of the world. And that's where I think better men can show up. Not the, I don't want to be feminine because, well, you get these conjured images of, I don't want to be a girl. Well, no, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about nurturing these things that will make you better and more complete.
Yeah, I couldn't say from an expert point of view or even a well-researched point of view whether this is the truth or not or scientifically proven, but I think a lot of us tend to feel that I either have this measure of femininity or masculinity in me or not, and I can either live that truth out or not. But I felt convinced in the past 48 hours, given the experience that we went through, that I feel very comfortable with this truth, that it is there, whether you like it or not, this balance, whether that's 50-50 or 70-30 or whatever you're living with in your being. And it's pretty hard to ignore that it's a healthy action to take to understand what measure that is and embrace it and let it flow through you and let it work with you. It's going to be a long conversation to have to describe how I got there in this experience, but I think that's part of what the Special Forces experience is as well, and what we're doing and what we're talking about in this whole three-part series is getting to a level of acceptance that femininity or masculinity is there, and why not learn it and become more familiar with it?
Yeah, all the tools that are out there, like the Way of the Trials or the Trials or Clarity or the Process, they're all about bridging that gap to become the holistic version of yourself, being that best version of yourself. It doesn't mean that, you know, you're necessarily seeking out just the feminine or just the masculine. It's about figuring out, in our case as men, how to be the best man possible so that we can be the best partners, best fathers, and show up the best version of male tools in the world. And you got to understand both portions to do that. You know, there's a lot of the perimeter protect kind of mindset, but provide, and that's a masculine thing. Well, women can do that too, you know. And right now we're in this modern world, we're trying to balance out what that looks like. how does that show up when mom and dad are at work all the time living in a masculine? You know what I mean? Because part of the other side of this is being a better holistic woman as well. So it's about endeavoring with these tools to understand those things a lot more. We mentioned the plant journey. To me, I would give it a definition as a bit of a feminine tone. But interestingly for Jess, you said it showed up more with a masculine tone.
You know, actually, I wouldn't say it was masculine. It was really intense. And that's something that can show up as divine feminine as well. Women aren't supposed to always be soft and nurturing. There's a big spectrum of it. Part of being the crone is having a direct and very like matter-of-fact way of communicating with the younger women and mothers and young men. The crones back in tribal time were the pinnacle of authority. And so a lot of times, in order to get a point across, you have to be intense. But there's always that sense of nurturing along with it. It wasn't abusive. And I think that might be something that we talk about when we move on to the masculine, is when does intensity become abuse? When is that, like, that father energy become toxic? And what's that line there? And why are we talking about toxic masculinity? Like, how is this showing up and why?
Yeah, the biggest misconception I've carried with me for the longest time is, and as obvious as it might sound to a lot of people, it may not be so obvious to others, is that the more masculine I can be, the greater a man I can be. Mm-hmm. And it's just it just seems like such an overly simplistic route that I've lived for so long, and so driven home in that experience during a plant medicine ceremony, that it's not that I acquired more femininity in that experience. It was that I just recognized it and became pretty immediately comfortable with it. And I felt my masculinity solidify in tandem with that. So
do you think it's because our modern world, how we're raised, has a lot of masculine tendencies, you know, hierarchical structure, strive, that achieving, you know, like I was saying about the rift that happens culturally when you're born, you know, boys do this, girls do this. Do you think it's because we're cultured to separate those two in a way? And then as a man going through, in this case, a ceremony, medicine journey with ayahuasca, it revealed and opened and shed some light on those feminine tendencies and re-context?
This certainly did shed some light on it and recontexted, but I would say that I'm tempted to say that it goes beyond just conditioning is what a man should be and what a woman should be. I think that in a more big picture way, we're conditioned to, at least in our Western culture, to be attracted towards binary ideas. So it's got to be one or the other. And that goes for a lot of things in life, but masculinity and femininity are such a big part of that issue, and just very little talked about, you know?
Yeah, and understanding it, I think, that binary, and understanding why that's not healthy, shows up almost every day in most low vibrational relationships, where argument happens, you know, something happens, man jumps into problem solving mode because that's the tools we have. Woman wants time to process this. We both handle those things differently, but it actually leads to a wall in people who can't communicate properly. We're understanding the feminine in this case, you know, which is actually just like a mirror neuron state where you have more, which helps you get into that empathetic state and stay there, where my like TPJ stuff makes me want to stay in a problem solving mode or go right to it. And how often are people like, you know, you're not listening, you're not doing this, and husbands think they're doing the right thing and women think they're doing the right thing. But the more we understand that feminine role, how it shows up in this case in our own minds, just a better balanced world, if you will.
I think we all learned the power of just being with somebody when you're suffering. I feel like a lot of times when men talk about, oh, women don't want their problems solved, they just want to vent, it seems like a bit of a cop-out on the woman's part. Like, how is that helpful for you to just vent? But when we did Daime, and we were all suffering on our own, and the women who were facilitating came over and just were with us, how comforting was that? How horrible would it have been if they were like, let's talk about it, let's figure this out together, you know? All you needed at that moment was just a presence, a nurturing nurturing touch, someone you just needed to know that they cared about you, and that was exactly it.
I also think, too, we could use nurture
you know, you think of nurture as this softness because there's a softness to it. But, like, I kept thinking of the mother that kicks her son out of the nest, the mother bird that kicks her son out of the nest, not because it's like she doesn't love him. Actually, it's the opposite of that. And so I felt a bit of that, right? It's like I was going through these experiences. They call it Mother Aya because it's a feminine, you know, energy, it feels as though. And that's what I felt. I was like, I'm going through the most painful shit of my entire life, yet I'm being nurtured in the process. And I know that it's actually for me. And so I would say for the masculine type, you know, we don't, when they're like, get in touch with your feminine side and you have an aversion to that, it's like, but understand that, like, there's a part of nurturing in life that just, like, your partner wants to be nurtured. And that doesn't mean that you are that doesn't always mean catered to. That actually, you know, it's like, it actually means that you just have their best in mind, and you do that with a bit of empathy, and there are different routes to get there.
Exactly.
When you say nurture, the special forces experience, the process comes to mind. Mm. You know, there's a gentle hand touch, and then there's a heavy hand touch. And in this case, we're working with men.
Yep.
And we are anything but gentle.
Right.
But it is still nurturing. You know, it can come both ways. I think as men, we could learn to accept the softer hand a little better. And I don't know how it is for women, if it shows up the opposite a little bit. Like Rick said, the ayahuasca journey is anything but subtle. Yeah. You know what I mean? But it felt more like mother nurturing, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think there's also that father nurturing. And I'm just curious from like a woman's point of view, with this like toxic masculinity right now, women aren't getting dubbed toxic feminine, and let's not kid ourselves. It's equal and just as prevalent. They just don't see it. You know what I mean? Like, is there that masculine that women should be adventuring into a little bit more, I guess, is what I'm kind of asking.
I think
you,
that we've rubber banded into feeling more into our masculine, or feeling that we have to be more masculine. So I don't think that necessarily we need to be more masculine. That's a complete overgeneralization. But just with our need to work and provide for the family, because in our society, we believe we need so much that a single parent income is almost never enough. So both parents are working, and when you're at work, you're usually your masculine, kind of depending on what you're doing. But doing anything for a timeline and trying to get stuff done is you and your masculine, decision-making, all that. So I would say, though, that women can understand the masculine a little bit more, instead of it just needing to be get stuff done, understanding when your man has maybe delved into one of his shadowier aspects of masculinity, and holding space for that until it passes, instead of meeting him with your own masculinity, like you feel you might want to because of ego or whatnot.
I think there's been such a, you know, you see the pendulum of culture swing back and forth, and because, you know, there's been a patriarchy in history, it's not like that's unquestionable, but because of that, and now we see like the boss babe is almost the reverse of that, right? So it's like you want to give that masculine role to women, and I think that's amazing. And I think, I hate to talk about this because people are instantly, I feel, going to be like, what, women can't work? It's like, no, that's not at all it, right? It's like you can be a boss, but like I think cutting yourself off to either side of your own, so like as men, it becomes toxic when you cut yourself off to your own feminine nature, because you do lose the empathy and you lose the ability to have compassion for people. And you do begin to think that people owe you shit. And then at the same cost, like women can do the exact same thing, and they can cut themselves off to their feminine side just because they think they have to be something in the world. And it's like, you can be whatever you want. But I would say it does seem to become toxic when you begin to cut yourself off from the opposite polarity that you're hoping for at that time.
Yeah. You're underdeveloped, right?
Right.
I see toxic masculinity as being more of the reactive version of an underdeveloped masculine person, you know, whether you identify as woman or man.
Right.
So this is somebody who is aggressive, angry, chauvinistic, just all of those more reactive, like extroverted types of fear responses, versus the opposite being the weak man. You know, it's an underdeveloped man, but he's repressive. He's shy and doesn't stand for anything and lets people walk all over him, and gives his wife, he tries to play nice with his wife and tries to not make any decisions. And I think that both of these are problems. We are highlighting toxic masculinity probably because that results in domestic violence and a lot of like things that we have to address at the moment. But this weak man that has the same problem as this toxic man they have the same problem, is that they don't understand the feminine enough to give a shit about it.
Yeah, being weak isn't being moral, mm-hmm. right? Like, just because you don't, just because, yeah, exactly. I would say it's like almost, yeah, you couldn't say worse or better, but it's like just, it's its own problem. It's like just because you're incapable of enacting something in your life doesn't mean that you're virtuous.
You're saying about acting out, I guess, your kind of feminine or masculine roles and the archetypes that come with that. If you're not living within, you know, the archetypal man and the archetypal female as a female, or and then a man as a man, you're probably not going to show up virtuous across that, even if you do understand the opposite. Or, you know, there's things that are consistent in a man and things that are consistent in a woman. And if you don't understand those kind of backings, and when I say archetypes for a man, the king, the mystic, the lover, and the magician. Yeah. And then for females, it's
the maiden, mother, crone, and warrioress.
And if you don't develop those properly, you know, you're not going to be the best woman you can be, and you're not going to be the best man you can be.
Well, you end up in the shadow of those. And that's like the importance of an archetype, is it shows you, well, what happens when that doesn't get developed? It's like, oh, it's like, so the king, right? The king archetype is like you have this, you know, you have a predisposition for authority and to take charge. But if it's underdeveloped, or you could show up in the shadow of the king, which is sort of like the impotent king, right? Which is like you don't have the ability to do that. And so maybe you do use something like authority or power over somebody else to get your point across, because you actually are underdeveloped in yourself.
And that's where I think the balance, as we'll just take the king archetype in a man for now, balancing the feminine and masculine perspective, you know, the micro versus the macro, and ultimately looking for the holistic. If you don't develop those, that feminine masculine balance, then you can't be the best king you are, you know, and it shows up differently for the king archetype than it does for the warrior. And the same on the other side, you know, the crone, if she doesn't balance that properly, she's not going to be the best crone version of herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. An example of like an underdeveloped divine feminine in that maiden, which is like the young woman before the mother phase, is your basic girl, you know, going to Starbucks. Going to Starbucks isn't bad in itself, but like the girl that follows all the trends and doesn't have a voice of her own and just wants to be accepted and blend in yet stand out, and she's uncomfortable with her sexuality, so she either doesn't
either reacts or represses,
exactly, overreacts or over represses it, and that is incredibly toxic to the masculine as well, because when you're dealing with a young woman in her insecurity, it leads a lot of confusion for young men. Mm. You know, the Me Too movement, it's complicated. It's complicated because we're dealing with a lot of insecure men who don't understand themselves yet, don't have a lot of good role models, and we're dealing with a lot of insecure women that don't know what to do with themselves, don't know what to do with boundaries. And whose fault is it? It's neither, really. It's kind of a result of us not being taught these things, probably.
The idea of certain programs like the trials is about understanding yourself, because you can't show up and try to understand someone else unless you understand yourself, you know. And that's, I think, the key is you gotta, if you're in that stage, it's about realizing, okay, I don't fully understand me, how am I ever going to show up for that other version, you know? Like, there's steps to the process.
Yeah, I bring it back to the plant medicine journey, and I wouldn't say it felt forced, but it was definitely, like you said, not a subtle introduction to whether you need to look at the femininity or masculinity roles in yourself. I'm curious what you guys think about the difference between having that forced upon you and you deciding to take an honest look at the femininity and masculinity in yourself. So for hypothetically, if take this person as an example, a woman could benefit from exploring her masculinity, or a man could benefit from exploring his femininity. Is there a big difference between having that forced upon them through experience or a teacher?
By the medicine, you mean?
No, in general, medicine, be that medicine or life experience, or is it best for them to accept this conversation and accept the benefit from it and explore it on their own?
I think it's, Rick would say, both. And I think sometimes you explore it on your own, and then I know in the process we force men into what people would view as more feminine states, where they're open and vulnerable and talk
And that is what makes it different than other special forces type selection paramilitary programs, is that there's an emotional aspect to it.
Yeah, and the reason I say that is because in order to achieve the full balance of masculinity, you know, you have to go through all that, and we force it upon them. Where, you know, plant medicine, it may not be forced on you, it might be your gentle nudges, even though we all would agree that ayahuasca provides a more feminine approach to it, not meaning it's easy, but there's also those times where you should be at home contemplating these things and doing the inward work as well. I think, it, like I say, both ends.
Yeah, it's really hard for a lot of people to get there on their own, I think, including myself, absolutely.
That's why you experience.
And it makes me, the word force makes me think of anecdotes and stories of abuse and trauma that don't necessarily result from growth.
The world will force almost everything on you, whether it's other people or the environment. It's always actually forced on you. You're really not, you know, you are the captain of your ship in your own way, but it's constantly forcing you, for better or worse, to do things and to grow and evolve. It's like whether you accept it open and then really hoist it aboard.
Yeah. And at the same time as that conjures up the word abuse or trauma in my mind, I still felt forced in this journey. And it felt,
welcome,
least to say, incredibly medicinal.
Mm. What I found to be interesting was that, I opened up this show saying it's like I've been a bit like searching for like a masculine. I don't know if it was a role model. I've been reading books about it lately. Like I've been looking around the world and I've seen a real lack of good men. Like that's what I've seen. I've seen like people that are suffering because there's not good men that are being fathers, that are being partners, that are being, and it's like really been bothering me lately. Like what the fuck is going on here? And as I was trying to delve into that problem on my own, I never thought to look to the feminine. Like, so essentially what I found was I was looking in all these places for the masculine to teach me how to embody my own masculine archetype. And what I didn't realize is that it was actually the fracture of my feminine side that was causing this inability to be the not to be the man that I wanted, but to sort of embody the man that I wanted to be, you know? And so that to me just highlights the balance of the two and in the symbiotic nature of the two and why they're so important.
What was it specifically about the feminine fracture that you had that you regained?
I had to be that nurturing side to my inner child. And that is a weird thing. If you haven't done inner child work, it sounds weird. I tried to do inner child work prior to this and I had a little bit of trouble. Mostly, actually, I didn't realize it's because I had had an experience that it's not that it was so painful. It's that my mind at 10 years old deemed it as so painful. It was so repressed I couldn't get to it. So, like, you know, Danielle does a lot of inner child work in her courses and in her coaching. And so she's trying to walk me through that process. And I'm like, nothing. I'm getting nothing. Like, she's like, well, picture it. And I'm like, I can't picture it. I don't know what you're saying. And I think it was a bit of a coping mechanism and a bit of a like safety mechanism in my own psyche. But what I realized is that in this moment of like extreme pain when I was younger, I just didn't know what to do. And I actually just needed to be nurtured in that moment. But now I found that whenever those moments of extreme pain would come up, I would have new coping mechanisms for them. And I couldn't actually just be the man in that moment. And it was bothering me because you see yourself in different things when you don't show up how you want to show up. And you can lie to other people, but there's some part of yourself you can't lie to. And so I was finding that there was like I just felt like a piece of me is missing. And I like was trying so hard to be that person in these painful scenarios and having a lot of trouble with it and realizing like, oh, wow, I needed something at that moment from the feminine nurturer in my life that I just didn't get. And it's not her fault. It's not anybody's fault. But it caused this what I'm calling a feminine fracture in my life. And because of that, like I had to go back through that experience and be that for myself and sort of walk myself through it.
Yeah, there's sometimes no better teacher than the old cold hard slap in the face, right? Whatever, no matter what your arena is to do that, you know, it can be physical pain, it can be an ayahuasca adventure, it can be contemplation, but it's when it actually gives you a good slap. Something happens, like a pain point or something, and then in that suffering, you kind of root that out, that wound, that coping that's been layered deep down. And I wonder, like as a man, to find a feminine rift is difficult, I think, through a man's lens.
Yeah.
You know? And sometimes it helps to have that balance with something that brings you feminine energy. Hopefully, it's a great partner that brings you great feminine energy and mm-hmm. can help you with that. But there's also other journeys that can do that. And in sometimes not such likely ways of nurturing. You know, nurture doesn't, I don't think it's always soft, you know?
Yeah. Right. That's what, yeah, that was kind of my point earlier. It's like nurturing doesn't mean that it's catering to, just because, you know, it's like nurturing is, to me, it feels more full than that. To me, it feels like, I guess it's something along the lines of like walking, or it's like just being next to through something that might be really fucking difficult, you know? But I think we see with helicopter parents now, like one of the dangers that are, that happen in that moment is that we cater to their need instead of giving them what they actually need. And you could still be with them while they're suffering, right? It's like I go back to a moment. I don't know if you ever watched the movie on Stevie Wonder, but there's a moment when he's younger and he like is playing with his friends and he like falls and he's like blind, obviously, and he like loses his shit and he doesn't know where he is. And his mom's like 10 feet from him and she's just got to sit there and watch him. She knows that she can't help him because she's not going to be there for him. And so she just sort of watches him do it on her own. But she's 10 feet from him. And to me, that's nurturing.
That's such a great example.
Yeah, versus like a shielding.
Right, right. Which is because you can't shield forever, right? The world's coming.
Yeah. And you, like you mentioned, childhood coping mechanisms. If you've only been given someone else's shield, you're not going to have the tools to cope properly later on, which inevitably will lead to improper behaviors and ill balance.
It might be obvious, but that one of the most traditional classrooms or indicators of an imbalance or lack of awareness of one or the other masculinity or femininity presences in you is a failed relationship, right? And you're wondering, maybe you're not wondering, but you can see where you came up short in masculinity or femininity. Like you, Rick, the last thing I would have expected would be a youth or a boyishness. You know, you hear a lot of it, you know, the man was too boyish or it was too this or too much that. And I can attest to that sudden realization in the journey itself that you call it a fissure or like a break in the femininity, not that it was not there, but it needed reparation of some kind.
Yeah.
Was definitely, I ended up spending a little bit of time with four or 5 year old Luke, you know, and it was just somewhere along the line, I felt like I needed to leap out of my youth or being in my boyhood. And I remember before we started the ceremony, we were going through the combo process, and our shaman, our facilitator, looked at me square in the eyes and said, "You've skipped a transformational phase in your life." And I didn't really think, oh yeah, it was then. But it was very clear at that time where, and I think this is just one of many possible examples for men or women in their childhood that they had to step up to a level of responsibility or grow up way too prematurely. And I can look back, and that's where the place I was taken, where I missed a part of my life where I was able to be embarrassed or childlike or make mistakes. And that was a part of the femininity that was just buried or lost somewhere in there. And I think that's maybe where men would be surprised to find it is in a skipped phase in their youth.
Yeah, because, you know, to me, it's like if you're not, if you don't get the, you know, that proper balance at the proper time and you're not soothed, then it becomes increasingly likely that you're going to learn to self-soothe in a way that fucks your life up.
Yeah. And a go-to for some parents these days is like a more masculine approach of suck it up, bury it away, move on.
Yeah, we don't talk about that, right? It's like you can't talk about your feelings and stuff. It's like that creates a real, you know, the real issue.
And that's one of those, I think, falls into the balance of feminine and masculine is talking about those things. There's nothing like getting it out there. It's a great journey. You know, talk therapy, that's what it does. It uses words between people to take you back. And then from that back, you move forward. You know? And I think men could use a little dose of that as the feminine to feel safe in that vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. I would say that one thing that I've noticed in men that I find is a little bit lacking is after they get to that point of knowing how to express their emotions, then how do I stay in my masculinity once I've become comfortable doing that? And I think that if you don't do the work after you've expressed the problem or you've expressed your kind of like emotions, more or less, then you're walking that fine line of being an underdeveloped man. Divine masculine is about progression. You know, it's about problem solving. And if you're not going to problem solve, then I do think that that's a big thing that wives are seeking in their husbands. Emotion, but like, then what are we going to do about it now? Don't get stuck in that cycle.
Yeah. It's something that's happening right now a lot. Women are having kids a few years into their marriage and leaving their husbands because they can't figure out that balance. You know, we talked about this. A lot of women are just getting what they want, you know, okay, you know, letting you decide where to go to dinner, letting you do all these things. And sometimes the masculine role is that decisiveness and not being scared to use that decisiveness to hold up your queen.
You know? Right. Because even the language that you're using right now, like letting you do what you want, from a feminine perspective, I don't want to always have to make that decision. You're not letting me do anything. I'd like you to let me be like follow you sometimes. And with that comes the sense that this is my rock and I can always depend on this person to make the right decision. So I think we had already talked about it, but this over-eagerness to please your wife or something isn't being a good husband, isn't being a good man. That's just passing the buck.
Yeah, well, especially then if you have, and this is where I this is what inspired me to want to change, is like the inability to be there for a partner, mm-hmm. Right? It's like, because I hadn't learned to express it, I like didn't know how to just be there in that moment. You know, like my sort of conception of a man was like, well, I like killed the fucking animal. What else do you want? You know,
yeah, right? Nothing to put up the perimeter and throw
some food. If anyone there. Comes to the door, I'll kill him. Like, we're good, we're safe. What else do you want from me? It's like a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? A lot more. Like, I want a partner, and it's just so hard to be a good partner when you have underdeveloped sides of yourself because you're just missing things constantly.
And I keep coming back to this thought of self-compassion as being a big thing that's missing in a lot of men today. And in order to love your partner at the biggest capacity possible, you need to know how that feels in your end. And that might be hard. And one of the tools that I used back when I was really really struggling with self-compassion and like judging myself, and therefore I was judging other people. So that was a big red flag. I was walking around feeling very like just kind of curmudgeon-y about everybody. And I realized it's because I'm judging myself super hard right now. So I'm not even sure where I got this, but everybody that you're walking by for like a week, just think about something that you like about that person. Mm. Oh, I really like their hair. Or, oh, wow, I really like your voice. And you don't have to say it, but just thinking that. And I got in the habit of really appreciating everybody, even if they're acting like assholes, because that's the hardest one. Like the guy who cuts in line. You're like, I really like that guy's hair, you know, and just trying to find something that you liked about that person helped me really feel like I liked a lot more things about myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the cynicism is an easy route.
Mm-hmm.
I think men can be much more guilty of it too. Women tend to like other people's hair naturally better.
Yeah.
You know, obviously we vibrate in and out of certain states, and men don't tend to do that. It's more of a judgment or opinion call versus that a little more feminine approach of I like this about you or I accept this about you.
And when you get in that habit of doing that to other people, you can't help but do that to yourself. And I think that's another thing that a lot of men who are struggling in their masculinity struggle with, is that self-judgment.
Yeah, something I mentioned in a morning coffee episode a few weeks back, which is like if you learn to give yourself what you really need, mainly compassion, acceptance, and love, what you'll find is that those things flow automatically from you. I don't know why that. I mean, it just seems to be the case, right?
Yeah, I mean, we can't help but project onto others what we project onto ourselves.
Yeah, pay it forward.
We don't have the mechanisms to do two separate things, right?
Mm. We're not right.
Really that complex.
Yeah. So low-hanging fruit, as far as if you're listening to this, it's like, where's the rubber meet the road in this conversation?
I think, so my background is Tier 1 SF.
Yeah.
We've discussed this before, Rick. You know, I think that's the upper ends of echelon of masculinity.
Yeah.
Definitely an imbalance.
Yep.
No, very little femininity existing there. And then when I left...
Part of that's necessity.
Part of it's necessity, for sure. You know, and I won't get into the morals of it, the good, the bad, whatever.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we'll move out of that, having to rediscover that femininity. I think... A simple low-hanging fruit is be vulnerable. The things that you think that people wouldn't want to hear or wouldn't want to talk about, you know, you're too scared or childish, whatever the coping mechanism, whatever the thing is, if you have something like that, be vulnerable at putting it out there. I think would be an easy button for men. And then also don't be scared to seek out places that will nurture that properly.
What's the question again, Rick? Where
just as far as like low hanging fruit, people that are listening to this are like, okay, this is great. It would be hard to argue that there's a symbiotic relationship in masculine and feminine energy within everybody.
Right.
You know, and I think if you're denying that, you're just lying to yourself at this point. But I think where can people begin to develop the opposite polarity in themselves? I think for men, like vulnerability, like you said, massive. I think truly like learning to, I think another one for men is developing language around what you're feeling. Because there's so much miscommunication that happens between partners, at least for me, when I felt like I was really embodying a hard masculine side, I felt like one of the shortcomings of that was that I had an inability to say what my actual problems were.
We read a study once, and they've shown that young boys, before we're cultured a certain way, actually have more emotions and they're more emotive. And we're taught to repress it. So just keep that in mind when you're doing this. Really look at, maybe backtrack all those things those times where you may have been told to box it up and failed to emote. And then take a look around there and see, you know, what would have been a better avenue to move forward? You know, what would have soothed the soul a little more?
Just from the perspective of the work that I do, I had no idea masculinity and femininity played a part in my conundrum in not valuing what I do. In my life's work at this time, I really had an insecurity about being a creative person. And I think now I've been given some insight that was my uncomfortability with my feminine side. I think,
that's a feminine,
right. Being that creative side of myself, felt a pressure to be not that way, to be more masculine, even though that's not at all how I thought of it. But now, being given a little bit of healing towards my feminine side, I can see that is the truth of the matter, because I feel so much more comfortable with being creative. And in turn, now I can be the man I can be on the side. So I can see that in a very real way play its part. So if you are a creative person, understand that it's not just about what you do. It's not just about your talents or your hobbies. Masculinity and femininity is definitely a part of that.
I would also say that if you decide to go through the trials and to really dig deep into who you are and want to learn what you want to do with your life, you have to access the part of yourself, that pre-wounded version of yourself, and remove all the shoulda, coulda, wouldas. And I think if you just place yourself there, you'll be able to naturally tap into your feminine, because there's no judgments. I think that's a lot of what we're talking about right now is, you are thinking the way that you should be based on being a boy. And by going through the trials and just acknowledging that you're just a human, start like that.
Yeah, I love that. Removing judgment is massive, because as long as that exists, right, you'll be too close to the pain and you'll continue the issue. You'll continue to repress or to bypass or to overcome or whatever. And so, well said.
Yeah, extremely well said. And I would say that from a certain position before you get there, it can definitely feel very uncomfortable and even scary, and even something that's just not desirable for you to just start being a human being and then go from there. But I can speak from my own experience, it's definitely a massive sensation of excitability, feeling that balance and starting as a human being going forward, and seeing that those two avenues are widely available to a man and a woman is awesome and exciting. I love it.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Rick.
Thanks, Rick.